So she started finding a lot more work as a model than she was as an actress. But then she got rheumatoid arthritis, and that set her back for 2 years. So she couldn't model for 2 years. Yeah, sucks. But then afterwards, she went back into modeling, and she was a Chesterfield cigarette girl.
Chesterfield's makes you feel better. That's what doctors recommend.
Is that their slogan?
It was one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your cigarettes definitely made you feel better, and they made you skinny, and they made you look really cool.
Doctors like to smoke Camel Reds.
Hello, welcome back to Show They Don't Tell You. So I noticed a common pattern. Oh, by the way, I'm Nikki Limo.
Salutations is Steve Green.
Steve Green?
Yeah.
Oh.
A.K.A. Miracle Man, A.K.A. Iceman.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
A.K.A. The Blind Fisherman?
Hello? I am now the Blind Fisherman.
Because I heard that's what they call you.
Animal Crossing. That's what they call me. That's what the villagers call me. For when I fish, it is as if I am performing miracles.
Because you are wearing a sleep mask.
I am.
Okay. Animal Crossing fans out there, maybe you understand this language, but...
The villagers always clap really hard when I catch a fish.
Yeah. By the way, I got a five-star island. What?
We got a five-star island.
No, that was me.
I agree. I really didn't do much.
Anyway, I noticed that there's kind of a pattern, and I didn't really realize it till I was prepping this episode, but of you doing a piece on a star that has fallen.
Yes.
And then me doing an episode on someone that really inspires me. So you did Nicolas Cage a few years ago.
Would they inspire me?
Sure.
Nicolas Cage absolutely inspires me. He's a fucking hero.
In a different way.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I did an episode on Eminem that you can go listen to. And then you did one recently on John Travolta.
I did.
And so I wanted to do one on my other hero, Lucille Ball. I don't talk about her as much as I do Eminem.
You don't talk about anything as much as you do Eminem.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So I feel like...
Including your kitties.
That's true.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's not fair because people don't know how much of an influence Lucille Ball has had on my life and how much I admire her. And it wasn't until Steve heard me talking very passionately about her. Was it on a plane? I feel like it was on a plane.
We were in many places. Yeah. You've talked very passionately about it in many places.
Yeah.
But you got really in depth one time about it. And I was like, Jesus, you should just do a whole show. We should just do the show about it.
Yeah. And I didn't really think about it that way until then. And I was like, yeah, that's true. I've done an episode on Eminem. Like, Lucille Ball is very much in that same bracket. What do Lucille Ball and Eminem have in common? You might not think much. But after I talk about this, maybe you'll see some commonalities of why I look up to these two people so much.
I look forward to hearing that connection.
Okay, so Lucille Ball, let's talk about her background. She was born in 1911.
Good year.
Remember those days? Those days back in 1911?
Great year.
What I think one thing that Lucille Ball and Marshall Mathers have in common is that they were both born into poor, tragic upbringings, which I feel like a hero needs like a poor, tragic upbringing. They need me to relate to them, right?
Yeah, people love it.
Yeah. And
Harry
like,
Potter had to have a bad time. So that you like Harry Potter more.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The what's it called? The opposition, the things that stand in the path of.
Yes, conflict.
Yeah, conflict.
Absolutely. Maximum conflict.
It starts with an A, the name of the
antagonist?
Word. No.
Oh, it's.
Adversity?
Yes,
there
that's
you go.
Exactly what I was fucking thinking. Okay. Thank you, Mark. Adversity. I think every hero needs adversity, and then it's how they overcome it that makes me just really fucking admire them.
You just faced adversity when you couldn't remember, but then Mark provided the answer. And we should cut out Mark providing the answer so that you look even smarter.
Oh my God, I would look so hella smart.
You got that, Mark?
If I just got that word on.
Hell yeah, we got the thumbs up. Beautiful.
So when Lucille Ball was born, she was born in 1911, and then after only 3 years, her dad died suddenly of typhoid fever when he was on a work trip. So she was only three, and her mom was pregnant with her baby brother, forcing her mom to go relocate and move back to New York City, where they were originally from. And then 4 years later, the mom remarried to a guy named Ed Peterson, and Ed did not like kids. Didn't like that the mom had kids, so the kids were sent off to live with their grandparents. Lucy was sent to live with Ed's parents, who were really, really strict. His stepmother was super strict, and they didn't really have much money in their household. It was said that they couldn't even afford pencils.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, yeah.
How are you going to even play Animal Crossing if you can't even have pencils?
You couldn't.
Wow.
And you couldn't get a Switch either, because they were all sold out in 1911 as well.
Oh my God, it's been sold out for so long.
Been so long. So she didn't reunite with her mom until she was 11, and then at age 15 expressed wanting to go to a New York school for dramatic arts. But when she auditioned for this school, they rejected her so many times. They actually wrote her mom a letter saying, "Lucy is wasting her time and ours. She is too shy and reticent to put her best foot forward."
Reticent.
Oh, I've never said that word out loud. What does that mean?
It's a stupid word.
I hate that word.
It's for wizards.
Mark, what's a different word for reticent?
Yeah.
Shy. It actually means shy.
Shy. Okay. Another word for reticent is shy, which I guess they basically say she's too shy and shy. So, you know what? You're redundant, school and of dramatic arts.
By the way, I love how these people... So, if you're out there and you get denied by the quote-unquote experts of your field, just know that the experts back then told Lucille Ball, a legend, a golden legend that you could put on the side of any building and nobody would even question it, that she wasn't good enough.
Yeah, that's actually how I got into Lucille Ball in the beginning, because I had gotten rejected from an acting school after getting to a masterclass level at my first acting studio. I auditioned for a really extensive screen. It was like a screenplay backstory type of class, but it was this really prominent acting coach and casting director. And they rejected me because they said I was way too green or 101. And I'd already been studying acting for a long time, and it just absolutely crushed me. I was terrible at auditioning. To me, it was nothing like acting, like when you're on set acting. When you're auditioning, it's completely different environment. It's not an environment that is helpful for acting.
It's like meeting a cow that's about to be slaughtered. Like, whereas you meet them in the field and they're doing their cow thing, you're like, oh, you know what? Cows are pretty cool, actually. Cows are kind of nice. Yeah. But the cow in that room, you know, cow's not going to be the same cow.
And some people are exceptional at auditioning and then not very good on set. And some people are exceptional at auditioning and good on set. But anyway, during this time, this was in my early 20s, I was totally devastated. Also, I was with a representation that I've talked about in previous episodes who was pretty verbally abusive and made me feel terrible for getting rejected.
So you're already crushed, and then you got crushed.
And then I got crushed again. Just like 2 hours of being lectured of why I failed and got rejected and all this stuff, which really motivates you to want to go on, right? I was looking for someone else to look up to, like a mentor or something. And Eminem has that way about him where when you fail or when people reject you, you didn't get back up. But Lucille Ball was a female comedian specifically at a time where there definitely was not female comedians. And then to read about how she didn't have a leg up at all and she got rejected so many times for acting school before she actually made it in. And then even when she was in acting school, even when she got accepted, they would tell her over and over again that she's talentless and she'll never make it and that she should quit.
You know what? All that stuff. To me,
lights a fire.
Oh yeah,
right.
We're just sometimes people are different, but for me, that stuff fuels my energy more than anything.
Yeah,
people tell me I can't do something.
It does for me too, but on like it's on a very subconscious level. The immediate response for me is to cry.
Well, sure, but you also now have like an innate level of confidence that maybe you didn't have back then.
Yeah, possibly, you know what I mean? But maybe it's like a chicken eggs scenario where it's like maybe I wouldn't have that confidence had I not gone through those experiences. Sure. Right. But yeah, I think it's really interesting how these experts, and this is still happens all the time.
All the time.
Experts are always telling people, you know, they'll never make it or they're not good or they should quit. And I think it's how you move on after being told that. That's really
how do you react to it?
Yeah.
How are you going to
It's really
face
telling
that?
Of who you are as a person and how much you believe in yourself and how far you can go. I think some people like to blame those moments, like their lack of success on those moments.
Yeah.
I'm being like, well, if I hadn't been told this over and over again, I might have been something by now. But
then you see Oscar speeches where they're like, I only got told no. And here I just showed you your asses. You know what I mean? Like it can be a motivator too. It's how you choose to see it.
Exactly. And that's what I really, really liked about Lucille, or related to her a lot on this particular moment in her life where I was like, wow, Lucy was told that and she kept going. And you know what happened to her? I'm about to explain the rest of her story. So she remained in New York City. And then by 1927, she had started calling herself Diane Belmont.
It's a great name.
Yeah.
It's way better.
That's her modeling name. So she found work as a model. And she was beautiful, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah, so she started finding a lot more work as a model than she was as an actress. But then she got rheumatoid arthritis, and that set her back for 2 years. So she couldn't model for 2 years. Yeah, sucks. But then afterwards, she went back into modeling, and she was a Chesterfield cigarette girl.
Chesterfield's makes you feel better. That's what doctors recommend.
Is that their slogan?
It was one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cigarettes definitely made you feel better, and they made you skinny, and they made you look really cool.
Doctors like to smoke. Camel Reds or whatever. I remember all that shit.
Are there like some movie scenes from that time in that era where like doctors are smoking in the hospital and stuff?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. They used to like smoke everywhere.
That's great.
Or like a husband's waiting for his baby to be born and he's like in the waiting room just smoking, smoking cigarettes.
They used to drink everywhere too. Like you see that in like a lot of the 50s stuff, like where the guys in their offices would have whiskey and glasses and stuff.
Well, I would drink too if Prohibition just ended and it's like everyone's just celebrating.
Hell yeah.
It's like when marijuana got legalized and then everyone's just smoking down the street. Like, you still can't drink in public, man. You still can't smoke in public. So anyway, she found a lot more work as a model than she did as an actress. But then in the early 1930s, she had dyed her chestnut hair blonde and moved to Hollywood to seek out more acting opportunities. And
wait,
she
chestnut is not red?
No, no, no.
Is she not a natural redhead?
She is not a natural redhead.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know?
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. She is not a natural redhead. She is a brunette.
You just blew my absolute mind. All her branding for me is redhead.
Oh, yeah. Did you know that Eminem's not a natural bleach blonde?
I didn't really give a shit.
Interesting. Both of my idols are brunettes.
Okay, moving on.
That dyed their hair blonde.
We got it.
Okay. So she dyed her hair blonde, and I actually saw some pictures of her with blonde hair, and she looked like Marilyn Monroe. Like, she looked like old Hollywood glamorous. So work soon followed. She got a stint as one of the 12 Goldwyn girls to promote the 1933 Eddie Cantor flick Roman Scandals. She did some extra work. She just like did bit parts here and there. Yeah, she did all these small roles.
Yeah.
And then even when she did start to star in movies and like kind of get her acting career on track, they were all like B-list movies. So she started getting known in Hollywood, like in the close Hollywood circles, as the B-list queen.
Mm. Yeah, I was scrolling through before we got here.
Yeah.
Some of those IMDb movies. And yeah, I never heard of any of them.
No.
Anybody who says they heard of that shit is a liar.
And when she got like roles in big movies, she'd just be like little tiny parts.
Yeah.
So then she got cast in a play that she thought would break her into Broadway. It got super good reviews and people were raving about it. And she's like, this is the one. But then one of the cast members got super sick, like gravely ill, like he was going to die. And the show's producers couldn't agree on what to do with the play. Like, should they recast? Should they write his part out? So they couldn't agree on it. So they just closed the play instead.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So then that was that. She didn't get anything from it. Later, she auditioned for the role of Scarlett O'Hara for Gone with the Wind in 1939.
Oh, imagine.
But Vivien Leigh got the part, winning an Academy Award for Best Actress for her role.
That always sucks.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah,
it's always weird to me when you hear about like what stars auditioned but didn't get the role.
Or worse. Sean, I can't remember her last name. She was in Blade Runner.
Uh-huh.
She was up for the part of Vicki Vale in Burton's 1989 Batman movie. And just before the start of filming, she was riding a horse and she like broke her leg.
Ugh.
And so she couldn't film anymore. And then they hired Kim Basinger after that, and they fired her, obviously.
Yeah.
And then Sean Ryan or something like that. She never like broke out after that. Like, that would have been her breakout
thing.
Right. And then obviously we all know Kim Basinger. You say her name forever. But that was Kim Basinger's breakout role.
But like, imagine, because this would have been Lucy's breakout role.
I know.
But imagine like if she broke out in a drama like that. Like, would she have ever been this huge comedy star?
She'd have been branded.
Yeah, exactly.
Now imagine they're shooting Gone with the Wind 2. And Lucille Ball shows up dressed like the role from the first movie, or dressed like another role, and is like, yo, put me in the movie. That's what happened to Sean Young. Sean Young is her name, Sean Young. She showed up to Batman Returns on set in a Catwoman outfit, like Haggerty, and I think she was drinking or something.
Yeah.
And she was like, I'm Catwoman. And like, they're like, get her off the set.
That is very Catwoman-like.
It's very Catwoman.
I mean, if you look at the way that
Michelle Pfeiffer played.
Yeah,
that role. Absolutely. But isn't that fascinating? Like it destroyed her for many years.
Yeah,
that she was that close.
Of course. Oh my God, that's got to be, dude. People do not understand how much you get told no as an actor. You get rejected so fucking much. There's so many auditions. So much preparation for each audition, and then to be told no over and over.
They
want to
go younger. They want to go hotter. They want to go bam.
Yeah, it's always just something, and you're just never good enough. And after a while, you're just like, I'm just not good enough. I'm just not good. And then you finally get a role, and then it gets taken from you like that.
Ooh.
That reminds me of like when someone else. What's the guy's name that booked the original Back to the Future, and then
Zemeckis. The kid who Eric,
he booked Michael J. Fox's role, and they already filmed like most of the movie, and then they had to scrap it all, and because it wasn't testing well, I think.
Yeah.
And then they reshot it with Michael J. Fox, and
Eric Stoltz.
No one could ever one could imagine Back to the Future without Michael J. Fox.
You know how I know the name Eric Stoltz?
What?
Because he was almost Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future.
Yeah,
honestly,
that's the only thing.
And no offense to Eric Stoltz, I'm sure he's never heard of me.
That's what he's known by. There's also like the drummer of the Beatles. It wasn't originally Ringo, but they thought that the guy was getting too much attention.
Isn't that wild?
So they replaced him. Yeah, those stories are nuts, man. Because it's like you could have been on top of the fucking world.
Not even just that. I mean, you're a legend forever.
Yeah.
You're a Beatle. You're a legend
in
forever.
History books.
Even Ringo, the most unremarkable Beatle, fight me. Is
I don't think anyone's gonna fight
more
you.
Of a legend than you know, even up he's up there with Elvis.
Right.
Like it's crazy.
Right. He's got wax museum figures and all kinds of shit.
Yep.
Yeah, it always trips me out. Like you know, imagining like if that would have been the path that happened for Lucy instead.
Nuts.
Just like Marilyn Monroe auditioned for the Breakfast at Tiffany's role that Audrey Hepburn. That iconic Audrey Hepburn role. She's on everything as Breakfast with Tiffany's with the cat, you know? And Marilyn Monroe wanted this role so bad because if you watch the movie, it is a lot like Marilyn Monroe's life. But she wanted this role so bad, she even wrote a separate monologue as the main character and performed that at the audition.
Wow.
And she still got rejected because the director just didn't really like her as much as
Isn't that great?
It's crazy.
You don't even know what it is, though.
Yeah.
It's not that she didn't do a good job.
Yeah.
Or, you don't even know what it is.
Because a lot of people really liked her monologue and like wanted her to be the role.
Dude,
a lot of people.
I've been in those rooms where you're auditioning people and it's just you don't even know what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Like that. And sometimes you can't even put your finger on why somebody's not right for it. You just are like, I don't know. It just doesn't see the way that we all pictured it. I don't know if that's what it is.
Yeah.
So I see both sides of it.
And sometimes you can be open-minded to an alternate way and someone like knocks your socks off in a way that it wasn't like you didn't intend it, but
they took a character in a different direction and it works even better than you ever imagined.
Yeah.
That's what you hope for always. But it's just fascinating to see how that works.
Yeah.
Somebody really has to break the mold for that.
And I think just hearing stories like this is what actually just really resonates with me and made me feel better as an actor. Like it soothed me during all of this time that Lucille Ball got so rejected so fucking hard so many times for so many years.
Yeah, because she's like, I'll try Blonde now.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me.
So then she ended up appearing in 72 movies just in like bit parts and stuff. And then like the ones where she was a lead, they were just B-list movies. But one of the earliest ones was a movie called Dance Girl Dance. And that's what introduced her to her handsome Cuban band leader named Desi Arnaz. The two appeared together in her next film, Too Many Girls, and before the year was out, the pair fell madly in love and married. So that's where she met Desi. And a lot of people were haters on this relationship because, one, was quite a few years younger than Lucy. Yeah, two, it was an interracial marriage, but I don't think that's what the friends had a problem with. It was more that, like, they were so different because Lucy was very career-oriented, and so all of her previous boyfriends had been older, more established and stuff. Desi was only 23 years old, and he was had a reputation as being quite a ladies' man.
Mm.
And so they're like, this ain't never going to last, okay?
If our daughter came home with a Cuban band leader, I would not be into it. No, because I hated bandos in high school. I never got over it.
Why
I can't
did you hate
stand
bandos?
They're fucking annoying, dude, and they always gotta talk about, oh yeah, well, we were doing nationals.
Oh,
it's
you know like, what, ugh. Though? I just thought you saying that really, because I was like, well, I didn't like theater geeks. You were a fucking theater geek.
I was not a theater geek.
You were a theater geek.
I thought theater was hilarious. I thought the people of theater, I thought the theater geeks were hilarious.
You won
I used
Master
to hang-
of Sassines.
I did. I won Master of the Scenes. Yeah, in all of California. But that's fine. You can make fun of it.
I'm making fun of how they misspelled scenes on your trophy because that's how much they cared.
I went to a place called CEDA where they give out an award, one award, for the best actor in the state. I won it.
But did you? Because it looks like you got a fake because it says Master of the Scenes.
They fucked up on the nameplate. You know why? Because some expert out there who judges people is like, oh, yeah, I'll do these trophies. And then he fucked up. It's not my fault.
Oh, it's his fault.
Yeah.
Oh, my bad. Anyway, you're a theater...
It's so funny that you get to laugh at my incredibly illustrious award. So few people ever even touch that kind of rarefied air.
You're sounding a lot like a theater geek.
And yet you mock it.
Oh, God.
Because of what? A misspelling.
We would not have been friends in high school.
No, we wouldn't because I didn't hang out.
I was in band for a few years, but not in high school. In junior high.
Okay.
I was a flautist. That's
better. I was going to say I didn't hang out with flautists.
I was a flautist. Well, you were a fake trumpeter. Don't act like you weren't in band. Steve was in band.
I didn't like band.
Pretending like he could play the trumpet, but really he would just hit buttons that he saw the person next to him hitting.
That was fifth grade. I didn't even touch band once I was in any kind of school that wasn't elementary.
Elementary.
True story.
Okay. You're very defensive about not being a band.
I wasn't a bando. Okay. I was in a music class.
Sometimes we hate what we are.
And I hated it. I got a D plus.
Sometimes we just hate what we are deep down inside.
Yeah. I wanted to play guitar. That's all I ever wanted to do.
I
wanted to play bass guitar.
I played bass guitar.
I actually, my one instrument that I would have played, because I think it's so sick looking, is sax. But my mom said absolutely fuck no because
Why?
It was way too expensive.
Oh, true.
And trumpet was way cheaper.
Dude, I learned bass guitar because I thought it was so dope. And I had never seen a girl in a punk rock band that just played bass guitar and didn't sing, too. Like, almost every girl in a punk band was exploited for as being the singer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like Gwen Stefani and all, you know. So I just wanted to just chill in the back and play bass guitar and just like look cool as fuck.
I love it. They look right? so cool. It's
it
unmistakable.
So cool.
Like Josie and the Pussycats, I don't even know what Josie was up to because I was watching that bass guitarist the whole time.
Yeah, but my parents wouldn't buy me an amp. So I learned by myself without an amp for a while, but then it just got tiring.
Yeah, you didn't care about it that much.
No, I did, but then my friends
got... If you
did,
you would have mastered it. I know you.
No, my friends got sent to rehab for being addicted to meth and they were my band. So thanks for bringing it up.
Well, I'll bring it up again.
Okay, cool. Okay, so anyway, she starts dating Desi, right? And despite... They were married for 20 years, and despite her and him kind of having a wandering eye, he did kind of have a wandering eye romantically.
You mean for Ethel?
No, not for Ethel.
Oh, okay.
Just for other ladies. But despite that, he did really support her and all of her ambitions in her career. So as, you know, the late 1940s rolled around, Lucille dyed her hair red in 1942 at MGM's urging. She was looking at a stagnant movie career. That's when she dyed her hair, by the way.
That was MGM's call?
Yeah, MGM was.
They did her the solid of solids, man.
They're like, you need to stand out.
That's a studio note. That's finally, I heard a studio note where I'm like,
you know,
that's a good
Judd
move.
Apatow is the one who got Emma Stone to dye her hair red, and then she got really known as a redhead.
True.
She was originally a blonde.
Wow.
And now she, I think, went back to blonde.
I think she went back.
Yeah.
That's
but yeah,
wild,
it was crazy, because at first we all knew her as a redhead.
For sure. I still think of her as a redhead.
Yeah, same. Anyway, so yeah, Lucy was looking at a stagnant movie career, unable to break into the kinds of starring roles that she'd always dreamed about, and as a result... Desi pushed his wife to try broadcasting. And it wasn't before long that Lucy landed a lead part in the radio comedy My Favorite Husband, where she played like a wife that had goofy antics. Sound familiar? Anyway, the program caught the attention of CBS executives who wanted her to recreate something like it for the small screen. But Lucy insisted it include her real life husband. And that was something the network clearly wasn't interested in seeing
bandos.
Happen. So she
bandos.
Walked. You know what? Isn't that nice?
That's crazy.
They were like, we want you to star in something for the small screen. And she was like, you include my husband or I'm walking. And they were like, no. She's like, bye, peace out. Because CBS executives thought the public would not accept an all-American redhead and a Cuban guy as a couple. So, and they were also unimpressed by Lucy and Desi put together a pilot on their own budget. And CBS was like, we're not impressed.
That's amazing.
Sometimes... I've auditioned for movies that my husband wrote.
We can move on.
And anyway, I didn't get into those.
At
movies.
Least you're able to move on as an adult from these situations.
Steve was like, "You put my girlfriend in there, or I'm walking." And they were like, "Nah, it's not gonna happen." And he's like, "Okay, can I still have my?"
I said, "I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Sorry.
Please, I'm so sorry. Yeah. Please do not cut me out of my own movie." Okay, so anyway,
at least Nikki moves on quick.
So. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about what happened to the I Love Lucy show.
When we return.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Okay, yeah, they got it.
After this.
They're good.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, are you listening to Shit They Don't Tell You? Because if not, how are you listening to this ad about Shit They Don't Tell
You? It's because they can't turn it off. They don't know how to turn it off.
Well, that's pretty convenient for
us. They're throwing their phone on the ground right now.
Once you can figure it out, could you please rate us and subscribe and like tell us that we're beautiful?
Listen.
We want it.
We need the validation. But mostly we need the ratings because, I mean, that's basically how the world is run.
That's how we continue to make more and more and more of this content, this glorious content that you love so much.
If you like the show, support the show. And if you don't like the show, support the show.
And it's for free. The stars are for free.
Yeah, you give them away for free. It's not like if you give 5 stars, you pay more money. They should have charged for every single star. I would have made so much money. And it just made a killing.
Okay, so before the break, I talked about how Lucy walked away when they were like, nah, your husband's not able to be in this project.
And we're back.
Okay. So what Lucy and Desi decided to do was they were like, fuck you, CBS. We're going to take our act to vaudeville. So they created kind of an I Love Lucy-esque show for vaudeville, and it did really, really well. It was amazing. It was sold out all the time. And so then CBS was like, oh, we fuck up? And they're like,
we're
so sorry.
That's great.
Come back. So then CBS gave Lucy and Desi a contract, and they're like, we want to put I Love Lucy into our lineup. But from the get-go, Lucy and Desi knew exactly what they wanted from the network, and their demands included the opportunity to create their own new program in Hollywood rather than New York, where most TV was still being shot. But the biggest hurdle was on their preference to shoot on film rather than the less expensive kinescope. I don't know how to pronounce that.
No idea.
Kinescope? I don't know. Apparently it's some alternative to film.
Work.
So when CBS told them it would cost too much, Lucy and Desi agreed to take a pay cut. In return, they would retain full ownership rights to the program and run it under their newly formed production company, Desilu Productions.
Holy shit, they're geniuses.
Yeah. But at the time, CBS was like, sure, like it'll probably be canceled in like 8 episodes because no one is going to accept this interracial relationship going on.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. So in October 1951, I Love Lucy made its debut, and to the television viewing audience across the country, it was immediately apparent this was a sitcom like no other. Bombastic and daring, the show, which co-starred Vivian Vance and William Frawley as Lucy and Desi's two best friends, set the stage for
Ethel and Fred.
Yeah, exactly. Ethel and Fred set the stage for a generation of family-related sitcoms to come. The program included storylines that dealt with marital issues, women in the workplace, and suburban living. A lot of issues that were never touched on in TV,
and now
film
they
or
can't
TV before.
Stop touching on them. Apparently, sitcoms.
Right.
Get something else going on.
I Love Lucy completely changed the game in so many ways. Like there's so many aspects of the show. Like one, that they were an interracial couple. Two, one of the most memorable TV episodes ever touched on the theme of pregnancy. When Lucy gave birth to little Ricky on January 19th, 1953, the same day that real life Lucy delivered her son Desi Jr. by cesarean.
You're kidding.
Yeah. So that episode aired the same day she was in the hospital having her real life baby.
That's like a vlogger baby.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, that's why I feel like there's so many parallels here. And especially since she was breaking into TV, which at the time was like a very new medium.
Yeah.
So it's the same, very similar to YouTube being like not really accepted by film and TV right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's very, very similar.
And then they had little Ricky Jr. on the show too. So they showed the full progress.
Yeah, the whole thing. Like that's all, the audience was very attached and they were very real. And since they owned the rights to the show, they could make a lot of creative decisions that were unprecedented. For example, the network had a big problem with them using the term pregnancy or pregnant, the word pregnant. Yeah. You weren't allowed to say it on air.
So what did you say? I'm with child?
No, they said expecting.
Wow.
And it became kind of a thing because Ricky Ricardo would say, she's spectin'.
That's funny.
Yeah.
And they would just use that and yeah. make bits. Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm. Or they'd sometimes use the French word for pregnant called enciente. Enciente? I don't know. I don't know how to say it.
I'll tell you off air.
I don't know. French people, let us know how to say that word because I have no idea. Very uncultured. But anyway, yeah, they had workarounds like that. They also were the first show to ever have a live studio audience. They were the first ones to do that. They were also the first ones to have like multicam and different sets on the same studio set.
So everyone's just copying I Love Lucy
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Every like multicam sitcom that came after that definitely copied the bones of I Love Lucy that had never been done before.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
And a live studio audience means that they did the entire show from start to finish in front of them, right?
Yeah, well, kind of. So they film... I've been part of different shows that had a live studio audience, such as How I Met Your Mother. And what they'll do is they shoot the scenes out of order. So,
right.
And I don't know if it was like this on I Love Lucy, but how they do it today is they do a rehearsal. Everyone rehearses a scene, all those scenes one day, and then the next day they do it in front of the live studio audience. And they'll shoot the scenes kind of out of order. So audience is laughing at that particular scene, but not necessarily like everything altogether.
Got it. It's not like a play.
And then some things are shot not in front of the audience, so they like get filled in on what happens. I don't know. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting the way they did it. Anyway, another thing that I really liked about Lucy when I found out about this, I really related to her on this, is that contrary to public perception, Lucille Ball was a huge perfectionist. Rarely was anything ever ad-libbed. And when she wasn't on camera, she was very business-minded. She was very to the point. She was very like getting things done the way she wanted them done. She wasn't
the same person on camera. Oh, right. The horror.
And she also, a lot of the things that were perceived to be ad-libbed, she had actually scripted those to a T. She would practice her facial expressions and her physical comedy in the mirror.
She's a genius.
Over and over and over again until it seemed like it was ad-libbed, but it wasn't, which actually inspired future stars such as Mary Tyler Moore, Penny Marshall, Cybill Shepherd, and even Robin Williams.
And even. You said nothing but legends, and then you said and even.
Well,
another legend.
I said Robin Williams because I feel like a lot of people think that his stuff was ad-libbed and stuff. You know?
Oh, I see. You like on mean? TV and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's surprising.
Yeah.
So that's why I think, and even... This might surprise you.
Very nice.
Robin Williams. But that I think I really liked that because Steve and I have talked a lot about, you know, Steve prefers improv comedy to stand-up.
Yes.
And even though there is some improv in stand-up, such as crowd work and stuff like that, I very much love the performance aspect of stand-up comedy, how even parts of the stand-up set that seem like they're, like, off the cuff are not off the cuff at all. And
correct. So that's not as easy for me to do because I'm just not that good at being stiffly married to dialogue. I'm very
right.
I cannot be myself as easily. I can be myself much easier if I am in the moment just reacting.
So to me it's like it's not stiffly married to dialogue, it's you're hitting beats and there's an order.
No, that's
of
great,
beats.
But
yeah.
I'm talking about me.
So you can improv within that beat, but there's still a structure.
Sure, and yeah. She obviously did that. I'm just talking about how I
can't handle it. And that's why I brought it up, because we've had this conversation a lot of times where I think, you know, publicly, Steve is very much known as like the funny man because you are doing bits constantly. Whereas I like to observe, and I'm a little bit more serious like when I'm just observing things, and then I like compiling all of it and creating something to be performed,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's how Lucy did a lot of things.
Yeah.
Where she's like kind of more observing on like in her private life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're more like Lucy and I'm more like a court jester. I hear
sure,
what you're saying.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah. That's exactly what I was saying.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
No, we'll do bits all the time and I love improvising with you, but I enjoy the performance aspect of comedy rather than the like improv freaks me out. Like I admire improvisers for being able to just like create a show not even knowing what they're going to do before they go out there.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of work to get there because I started terrified. Everything that I'm talking about being stiff with dialogue, like I was terrified doing improv in the beginning. Like,
it's absolutely terrifying. I recommend everyone do it, by the way, because I think we should all push ourselves to be in uncomfortable situations mm-hmm. and like kind of learn how to work on your toes. But
Yeah, I also recommend short form improv to people too. People, I know a lot of people in LA especially, they love this shit all over short form improv. I remember even moving to LA after having done short form improv for fucking 5 years and shitting on short form improv. Like because I found this new version of improv that was longer and smarter, quote unquote. Mm. But it's really just short form improv helps you be quick in the moment and be concise with your points because or whatever you're saying, you can get in and out quickly because that's what you're trained to do in front of an audience is night after night.
Yeah, that's terrifying too.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people have, it takes them a while to formulate their thoughts or to get their point across. When short form improv, they teach you the structure of your thoughts so that you can just go point to point to point, which is great.
Right. I took short form improv, but not extensively.
Yeah.
It was like way back, it was like mixed into our acting classes.
Right.
Yeah.
That's why, that's why when I say do classes, that's one thing, but do it for years, night after night after night. If you really take it seriously, you can learn how to make anything funny, I think, eventually.
Yeah, totally. And if your goal is to be an entertainer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. These are some facts about I Love Lucy that I just find great, is that for four of its seasons, the sitcom was at the number one show in the country. In 1953, the program captured an unheard of 67.3 audience share, which included a 71.1 rating for the episode that featured Little Ricky's birth, a turnout that surpassed the television audience for President Eisenhower's inauguration ceremonies.
Dude, that means, and I could be wrong about this, but that means that almost, that's 7 out of 10 families watched I Love Lucy.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Well, 7 out of 10 people watching television were watching I Love Lucy at that time. Yeah. Crazy. Oh. And then when the show ended in 1957, Desilu Productions continued on producing more television hits like Our Miss Brooks, Make Room for Daddy, The Dick Van Dyke Show, The Untouchables, Star Trek, and Mission Impossible. Wow. Did you know that Desilu Productions did all that?
I had no clue.
Yeah.
They didn't exactly have Desilu before Star Trek, did they? Did they have the Desilu like insignia that's so famous in our heads from I Love Lucy before Star Trek?
That would be funny. What are you talking about? How they write out I Love Lucy?
No, how they write out Desilu Productions.
I think that was just for I Love Lucy because it was like the theme in the theme of I Love Lucy. But I don't know. I don't even know really what their logo like looked like. I should look that up.
It doesn't.
Yeah, along the way, Lucy created just a television dynasty and achieved several firsts. She was the first woman to head a TV production company, the first woman ever, which is Desilu, that she had formed with Desi. But then after their divorce in 1960, she bought out his share and became a very actively engaged studio head. She also became one of the first women multimillionaires because she bought out his share and then she sold the studio eventually in 1967 for $17 million, which is $130 million in today's terms.
Jesus H.
Yeah. And then it emerged into Paramount Pictures.
And they made billions since then, I guarantee you.
For sure. Oh, yeah. She went on to star in other things too. A couple other TV shows that weren't as popular, but they still made a few million each. And then she wanted to get into dramatic acting a little bit later, but even though she did a good job and she was kind of praised by critics, it just didn't really take off because the whole world loved her.
It's like Jim Carrey, man. It's the same thing. It's just, I miss him in the comedies. Just keep doing that. I know that you got sad feelings inside and you want to look at yourself in the mirror in a movie, but I don't care about it as much because you're a genius at one thing.
Yeah.
And then when you do this other thing, I've seen other people do it better. That just happens.
Yeah, but I get it. Like, it's because her whole life she had studied drama and dramatic arts, and her idols were all dramatic actors. And so there's this like piece of you where even if you make it in this one area, it almost doesn't count. Like, even if you have all this recognition, it's like, but I still didn't make it as the dream that I was going for.
But imagine being a legend, right? Like,
right.
You're Louis Armstrong. Like, everyone's like, holy shit, you're incredible at this. And then Louis Armstrong's like, I want to do improv classes.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Exactly. But that's exactly how it is. And that's how it is for a lot of people who get famous at a thing that they weren't planning on getting famous at, which is what I just find so interesting and also relatable that for people that can't see their own good or the things that they've done, you know, that should be recognized because they're so focused on what they hadn't done or like what they had been going out for and got rejected on. And like, maybe if she was fueled by that whole, you know, desire to prove her acting school wrong, she never really got to prove them wrong in that way that's like, I made it as a dramatic actor.
You know what's great though is that Nicolas Cage's current branding is that he could He could just start, he could do a tour where he's like, it's Nicolas Cage doing violin.
Yeah.
And we, I think people would accept it.
That's why I think, what's his face? What's his name that did the I'm Not Famous Anymore?
Yeah, Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, he's Trolling Maxima.
I thought that was genius. Like, it was. Lot of the shit that he did after acting, like, I didn't really give a fuck about him as an actor, but the shit that he did after acting, which was, like, that installment and then, great. Like, a couple other things that where he was trolling.
Well, he got caught plagiarizing, and then he decided to use the momentum of that to like, reform his image and like he kind of just started trolling, which was fun.
Yeah, I really liked that. It made me respect him a lot more.
Me
and then
too.
he did like a Sia music video where it was like pretty passionate and like it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I like always get blown away when there's like a surprise I didn't see coming from an artist. But just to name a couple awards and recognitions that she has received, Lucille Ball, I'm talking, because I love when people are told that they'll never be shit,
oh, yeah.
and then they kill it this
me
hard.
Me too.
And like, that's probably why I really love Eminem, because all his life he was told he'll never be shit, and then he failed ninth grade 3 times.
And he's still obsessed with talking about how they said he'll never be shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, dude, you can sing about something else. But then then his next song is, I know I should sing about other
yeah.
shit.
Yeah. He's so self-aware, but it's with this deep ingrained trauma of people like not
chip on
accepting
your shoulder,
you.
Never goes away.
Exactly.
Never
it
goes
doesn't
away.
Go away no matter how much you kill it.
That happened to Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Tom Brady got fucking drafted in the fourth or fifth round or some shit. And he's like, fuck you every year.
And I think it's part of that tortured artist thing is that like, no matter how hard you kill it, there's always this chip on your shoulder.
Exactly. Like, look at Tom Brady. He got 6 Super Bowl trophies. He's still got something to prove. He's 40 fucking 2 years old. He's going to the Buccaneers. It's crazy.
It's crazy. Okay, so some of her awards. In 1971, she became the first woman to receive the International Radio and Television Society's gold medal. In addition, she won 4 Emmys and got nominated for a lot more. Induction to the Television Hall of Fame and recognition for her life's work from the Kennedy Center for Performing Arts. She's got 2 stars on the Walk of Fame. Not 1, but 2.
Wait, what's the second one say?
1 for TV and 1 for motion pictures.
Wow.
Posthumously, which means after you've passed away.
Posthumously.
Posthumously?
Yep.
Is that really how you pronounce it? I feel like you're trolling.
No, I'm not.
All right. Anyway, she received the Presidential Medal of Freedom from President George H.W. Bush on July 6, 1989, and the Women's International Center's Living Legacy Award. The Lucille Ball Desi Arnaz Museum and Center for Comedy is in Ball's hometown of Jamestown, New York. The Little Theater was renamed the Lucille Ball Little Theater in her honor, and Lucille was among Time Magazine's 100 Most Important People of the Century. On June 7, 1990, Universal Studios Florida opened a walkthrough attraction dedicated to Lucy. It's called Lucy, A Tribute, which features clips of the show as well as various pieces of trivia about her, along with items owned by or associated with Lucille and an interactive quiz for guests. It was permanently closed on August 17, 2015, though. On August 6, 2001, which would have been her 90th birthday, the United States Postal Service honored her with a commemorative postage stamp as part of its Legends of Hollywood series.
Year?
2001.
Stamps still mattered then. Wow.
Yeah.
That is an honor.
She also appeared on the cover of TV Guide more than any other person, which surprised me because I feel like Oprah's been on there quite a few times. But she appeared on 39 covers, including the first cover in 1953 with her baby son, Desi Arnaz Jr. TV Guide voted Lucille Ball as the greatest TV star of all time.
No argument
there.
That's on
TV Guide.
I got no argument there.
And it later commemorated the 50th anniversary of I Love Lucy with 8 collector covers celebrating memorable scenes from the show. And in another instance, it named I Love Lucy the 2nd best television program in American history after
number 1?
Seinfeld.
Come on.
Yeah.
Lucy fucking changed. There would be no Seinfeld. Seinfeld knows that. Though.
I know. Lucy was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame in 2001. The Friars Club named a room in its New York clubhouse for Lucille Ball. She was also awarded the Legacy of Laughter at the 5th Annual TV Land Awards in 2007. This is all after she passed away, unfortunately. But Google.
Imagine you're so sick that they give you awards after you're dead.
Yeah. In 2011, on what would have been her 100th birthday, Google honored her with an interactive doodle on their homepage. You know how they change the homepage for
they do it every day.
Different holidays and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
But they used to only do it on holidays.
I see.
But yeah, they gave her one for her birthday, which displayed 6 classic moments from I Love Lucy.
She was amazing, man.
On the same day, a total of 915 Ball lookalikes converged in Jamestown to celebrate the birthday and set a new world record for such a gathering. In 2009, a statue of her has been displayed in New York, in Celeron, New York.
I buy it. I buy all of this. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was amazing. I mean, that show, I remember being a kid, and we would watch the Nick at Night, and they had that every night.
Yeah.
And that was the best show on there.
It's the most watched TV show in history.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's funny because I'm a kid. I was born in the 80s, and I connected with that show in the early 90s. Like, that's how timeless it is.
Yeah, exactly. And it didn't matter that she was a woman or that there was an interracial relationship or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, she broke so much ground. And I think that's why I look up to her so much, is because it was before anyone ever did that. She still believed in herself. She didn't have another person to look to where she was getting rejected to be like, oh, if that person can do it, I can do it too. Like, she had to set the ground for everybody to come after her, which is so crazy. But yeah, like, she fought for the right to work while pregnant. She gained tremendous success in a male-dominated field, and she did a great deal to destigmatize interracial relationships, as well as being a really well-known gay rights supporter. Hmm. So she was just very progressive, very ahead of her time, and I just really love her for that.
Did she have any pets?
I don't know.
How could you not know that?
I guess.
I thought you did your research.
I didn't research her pets.
Okay.
Yeah. But I saw so many parallels, especially since... Like, I've been looking up to her since before we were ever together. And then, the fact that her and Desi fell in love and then started a company together. And mostly they did I Love Lucy so they could work together. Because one thing that put a strain on their relationship was that they were constantly working separate from each other because they were both entertainers. And so they created a show that they could both work on together. And then audiences really liked it. And so then they, built a whole career with each other.
Yeah, I've said for years she's one of my heroes. So pat on the back to me for that.
Oh, good for you. I've never heard you talk about her.
I have.
Oh, okay.
So she's been one of my heroes for a long time. No, but she's, I mean, dude, it's just one of those things where it's not just like the performances were good, but the writing was good. And like the way that they just did that show where Lucy fucks up and you're waiting for that.
Yeah.
Like that was so, the best part about that show is when you're sitting there watching it, they had like a magic trick where you're just waiting to see how she messes up and then what she's going to do about
it. How she gets out of it. Right. Yeah.
And then they had like the, you know, bad guy coming home was always Desi and how he's going to be so mad.
Yeah. And which is usually vice versa in modern sitcoms. It's normally like the guy is the funny one and the wife comes home and she's like, what did you do?
Yeah. And then he would, you could also tell that he loved her. Which I think was probably why she wanted to have her actual husband in the show.
Totally.
There is a chemistry.
A
magical chemistry to it when you're watching it.
The other thing is, like the things that they were able to do because they own the show, like when she got pregnant, the network was going to cancel the show. And so instead they just wrote the pregnancy into the episodes.
Which was unthinkable, obviously.
And unthinkable, never had been done before. They had never shown a pregnant woman on TV before.
So funny.
Yeah.
What
and
were
so,
they scared of? It's so funny.
They're scared of women.
They're all right. They're all getting them pregnant behind closed doors.
Women had to be sexy only. Right, like they were sex objects only.
Right.
And that's why she had so much success as a model before, I think, you know, because she was so beautiful. And then like they were like, well, you're not a comedian. You're a fucking model.
You're
so. And then that's why, you know, she didn't really get success on I Love Lucy till she was in her 40s.
But do you see how people have to just fucking prove it?
Yeah.
Like Nobody's going to hear you say, I insist, I'm funny too.
Right.
And then they're like, okay, let's give you your own sitcom.
No.
It doesn't happen. You have to prove it. You have to show people that you're that. Like, that's something I learned very early on.
Yeah, you can't
game.
Just be like, they didn't hire me because I'm a lady.
Right.
Like, you have to go prove that you're funny.
Yeah, and I've talked about this before. I'll say it very quickly, but I was at Maker Studios many years ago. I had just gotten hired on as a writer. People knew me more as like, I'd done a couple funny things and a couple funny videos. But I remember Kasim G had turned down this thing that was like a lot of money at the time. And I remember a bunch of the Maker people were like, if only we had somebody else who could do this Man on the Street stuff. And I was like, I could do it. And they all just kind of looked at me. They didn't like think I could do it. They all just kind of looked at me like, what are you talking about? Like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
And then after that, I was like, oh, this isn't their fault. This is my fault. I didn't show them that I can do this.
Right.
They don't know that. I know that I could do this, but they haven't seen me do this yet.
Yeah.
And so I have to go do it now. And that's what I did. Because I got that reaction that fueled me harder than anything. I can still visualize to this day the way that they looked at me.
For sure.
And those are all good, nice people. Nobody's mean. Nobody was bad person. All this stuff that you could say in like extrapolate
and say like, oh, like if you would gone the other direction, like I could have been something, but they didn't want to give me a chance.
No, yeah. It can be the smallest thing yeah. that ignites your flame, and then you set a fucking fire to the world in your own way.
And by the way, I honestly think you should prove it. Like,
yeah.
Like when you're hiring someone, like when we were hiring wedding photographers for our wedding, I didn't just hire someone because they were like, I'm a good photographer. Right. I looked through so many people's portfolios. Exactly. I saw who else they worked with before. I saw their pictures from other previous weddings. You know, people need something to reference to before they can just trust you with their project, because a lot of projects are, they cost money. There's a budget involved. If you fail, then they fail.
And dude, to this day, I guarantee you those people, I could name them, it doesn't matter. They don't know what they did for me in that room. They don't know that I saw that no as a
challenge,
huge challenge. Yeah. For them, they're just like, what are you talking about? You know what I mean? It wasn't
right.
It was like the most minor conversation for them, but it was the most monumental one for me.
Sure.
And I so there's this new Michael Jordan documentary that's out, a bunch of people talking about. I haven't gotten to watch it yet, but I know some Michael Jordan stories about how he reacted to certain slights. Like Isaiah Thomas, he was a Detroit Piston. He did not shake the hands of the Bulls after they beat them in the NBA Finals mm-hmm. the first time. And he just walked out of the room. And Michael Jordan took that and fucking ran with it forever. Wow. He never forgave him. Like, he still hates the guy, like, 40 years later.
Those little fires.
Oh, you just don't know. And by the way, that was considered a big deal at the moment. But there was a bunch of stuff that, minor things that people did to Jordan. Little slights, little tiny things. Where if you watch his Basketball Hall of Fame induction speech, he actually brought a bunch of those people in the room. And then he fucking clowned on them for doubting him. In the most minor ways. And they're all laughing because they don't even remember these conversations or these little slights that yeah. they did. But he's like, you fucking gave me that fire that made me the greatest basketball player of all time. Like, that's what people don't realize, is the slightest, smallest things that you do sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't
totally.
Even know what it is.
You don't even, yeah. And but it's all about the way that you choose to take that.
Exactly.
You know, and use it for you. Some people use it against themselves. Yes. Some people use it to sabotage themselves.
I tell this to people all the time. There could have been a greater basketball player than Michael Jordan, but he never set foot on. He never gave himself the chance of even thinking that he could do that.
Right.
And people maybe in his area are like, he's a fucking amazing. And it's like, well, how amazing is he? Why isn't he going out for the NBA? It's like, well, maybe there's something going on. Maybe some extenuating circumstances. Maybe money. Maybe there's a lot of things going on. Maybe he just had a kid and he can't go out.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that happen, I think, that keep people from greatness. And it's time to just like go, you know what? I kind of want to be the driver right now. I want to sit in that seat. And that's what Lucy did. I want to sit in that seat. I've been sitting in the back for a long time. I think if you guys let me sit in the seat, I would do pretty good. And they're like, fuck you. You're not getting in the seat.
And and I always reference to my heroes like Eminem and Lucy whenever I'm personally struggling with something. And one of the things that I didn't really look back up again and remember and realize is how late she had kids as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because back then, you know, people were having kids at like 18. Like that 18 was like the normal. Like 18 to 21 was like you got married right out of high school, you started a family.
Right.
And she didn't have her first child until she was 40. It was actually like a couple weeks before her 40th birthday.
Wow.
Yeah. And so right now being like, oh, like there's so much I want to do in my career first, but I also want to have children. I don't want to miss out on having a family.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, shit. Lucy killed it in her career. And then she went on to have two kids.
Yep.
One at 40 and one at 42. Desi Arnaz Jr. was not born until she was 42.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm like, she really did it all. And she didn't give a fuck what anyone had to say about it.
Listen, when people told her to stay out of the driver's seat, she built her own fucking car.
Yeah.
And she sat her ass down in it. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like,
and she just like dollar bills out. Yep. Like, what do you think now, bitches?
What are you going to do? I own it all. And I have my own studio.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
She was also a mentor to a lot of other huge stars, which I think is just fascinating. Like Carol Burnett, she really took Carol Burnett under her wing and was like, appeared on her show several times and had Carol Burnett come on her future sitcoms and stuff, and would send Carol Burnett flowers on her birthday every year. And Lucille Ball actually died on Carol Burnett's birthday. And later, like, she found out that afternoon, Carol Burnett found out from the news that Lucy had died. And then later that afternoon, she received the flowers that Lucy had sent before her death.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Love that. Yeah.
Wow, thanks for that, Nikki.
Goosebumps.
Wow, good good way to end it. No, but
I just like everything I've ever heard about her.
I know.
You know?
Well, I heard that, you know the show Family Matters?
I do know the show Family Members. Okay. Matters.
Family Members. Family Members.
Did I do that?
Exactly. The Urkel Show. So the way that they did it back then was, and maybe this is like repeat information from what we just said, but a lot of these shows would collab with each other. Like,
yeah.
They would have one character meet another character.
Yeah.
And then like a person in the elevator would be somebody from another show and they just have a quick interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes they would spin off those characters. So they took this elevator lady, I think they had her on the Jeffersons, and it was the mom in Family Matters who was married to Carl Winslow's character.
Mm.
And they built a whole show around the fan reaction to her interactions on the Jeffersons show. And so they're just like, we'll give her own spinoff show. People love her.
Yeah.
Those episodes always get well rated. They had her in a bunch of episodes that year. And so then she gets the Family Matters spinoff. And so it's supposed to be a show about the Winslows, right?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be about so then Die Hard happens. Reginald Val Johnson, he played the cop in Die Hard, and they cast him as the cop in Family Matters, right? They're just like, you'll be the same guy, basically. And then Urkel comes in like three episodes into the show. Mm-hmm. And the audience reaction to that is so strong. The show became the Urkel Show. So like it goes from like best laid plans and like collaborations like actually change the game for all
for
those
sure.
Guys.
Just like how it did on YouTube.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, in the early days of YouTube.
But people like to think that YouTube is some new thing and they're doing something different.
Yeah.
But it's really the same thing, just on a different
medium. Just a new platform. Yeah.
Right. And way less professionally done.
Yes.
Way less.
But, you know, some might say that's a sign of the times because people are relating more to unprofessional, productions rather than the fancy.
Perfectly scripted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because it feels like there's a barrier that's not as relatable.
But at the end of the day, that's all people want, right? When they're watching Lucy in the 50s and she's pregnant. And they're like, hey, I'm
pregnant too.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're seeing that and they're like, I relate to that. And like, she has a kid. And they're like, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
It's people at the end of the day, everything is about somebody wanting to relate to something.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the best things and even the most futuristic shows that I watch, like Star Trek, the best things are the most human
originally
elements.
Produced by Desilu Productions.
Thank you. But the most human elements of those things are what we all attach to and care about.
And that's what drew me to acting in the first place was the storytelling aspect, was that like being able to relate to characters and like seeing something new that I was like, oh, I didn't see it that way before. You know, being able to change perceptions.
Dude, and I was a 9-year-old boy watching I Love Lucy and I related to Lucy. So go figure.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's just about you see yourself, because I used to get myself into situations where I'm like, how the fuck am I getting out of this
shit? Same.
And I always felt like no matter what I did it a little bit wrong. And so you're just watching that and you're like, oh shit, somebody else is going through that. I didn't go, oh, a woman's going through that. I guess I can't relate.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was just like, I'm a little kid. I'm like, wow, that's I've felt that before.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. That's what I love about the entertainment industry in general. But yeah.
That's the bright spot.
So Lucille Ball, a legend.
I doth my cap unto her.
Fucking legend. I love her so much.
Yeah.
And I love everything that she trailblazed for all of us that came after.
And I love Fred on that show. He was classic.
And Ethel.
Well, of course.
Poor Ethel.
But everyone like that. Loves Ethel. I'm talking about Fred. He's the most underrated character on that show.
Mm-hmm.
The grumpy ass Fred. He did a great job.
Yeah. And that's it.
That's it.
So there's that. We like Fred.
Yep.
Say something.
Deal with it.
Deal with it.
Fred, better, greater than Lucy, probably.
No, hey.
Never got
too
a shot.
Far,
he never
far,
got to sit in the driver's
far.
Seat. He never got to sit in the driver's seat.
He should have built his own car.
Ah, nice.
Thanks for listening. Please rate us. Also, share with your friends. It really helps us out. We're just trying to get the word out. The more people know about it, about
seriously,
the show,
just
the,
sit
the better
a friend down
it is.
And go, please listen to the show. It would mean a lot to me.
Maybe while you're gardening or doing whatever quarantine activities you.
Hopefully, playing Animal Crossing, probably.
Yeah, listen to a player playing Animal Crossing.
I just called you out. I know you. Hey, I see you playing that Animal Crossing.
They don't hear you because they're busy playing Animal Crossing.
No, they hear me because they're listening to
hopefully,
us while playing Animal
hopefully.
Crossing. I know they are.
We're
I know in my heart.
We're suggesting it. All right. We love you guys.
Bye, guys.
Bye.